You're listening to Trek FM.
Welcome, Niners, to another episode of The Orb, our dedicated Deep Space Nine podcast. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me once again, as he is every week, is my esteemed co-host, Matthew Rushing. Now, Matthew, usually I portray you as some other character at the beginning of the show, but, you know, this week I really don't have anything for you other than to ask you, why is it that every time I see you, you have a Jamja stick in your hand?
Well, it's because that they have this kind of raw sweetness to them that is really delicious. You think that it might be overpowering, but really what it does, it just kind of blossoms on your tongue and it just gets better and better with each lick. And so if you haven't tried Jamja sticks, I really think that you should, Chris. You know, they sell them on the promenade here, and the Bajoran's very nice. Well, that is, he's really nice as long as you're not trying to close down their school and not teach about the prophets. So, yeah.
That's right.
Yeah, be real careful about that.
And if you do that, he cuts off your supply of vitamin C from the Jamja stick.
Which was insane, because it was the only source of vitamin C for me. Because, you know, replicated food, very low in vitamin C.
Yeah, it really is. So, we bring this up because today we're going to talk about an episode, actually. And we're going to talk about In the Hands of the Prophets, which is the final episode of Season 1. And of course, as you know, this is not really an episode review show, and we're not going to be reviewing the episode per se. What we're really going to talk about is the point at which Deep Space Nine really started becoming Deep Space Nine. Now, of course, I think it started becoming DS9 in Emissary, but after Emissary, we got, for the first season, mostly a long string of very TNG-like episodes. You know, the stories, most of them felt that they probably could have been done on TNG, and the resolutions were quite similar as well. It's at the end of Season 1 where we really start to get into the complexities of life on the station, of the Bajoran political system, the religion. And DS9 started exploring a lot of very controversial real-world issues. It started in Duet, I would say, just before this episode, and then it really blossomed in the Hands of the Prophets. Now, Matthew, I think this, as we've said before on The Orb, you are a man of great faith, and I am atheist, so we have very different points of views on matters that we're going to discuss today. But that's why I think this is a perfect episode for our discussion.
You know, I think so too, Chris. And, you know, in some ways, I don't know if we'll differ on what we think maybe the solution should be.
Yeah, probably not.
But I do think that just the way we would approach it will be a little bit different. And one of the things that for me just really stood out in this episode, and obviously here in the States, we have this as an issue. But the idea of faith and whether or not you teach that in schools, you allow that in schools, and is that something that we want to have happen? And for me personally, and I think a lot of people who maybe believe as I do, I don't really want the religious education that my children would get to be given to them by somebody who is not a believer in that belief system. And I don't think it's right for, you know, a school to make the choice to educate everybody in that, because I believe that it needs to be a personal choice that the parents make in raising their children. You know, this is not where, especially in America, we don't have a state religion, and we don't have one on purpose. And therefore, I wouldn't want my children, if I had them, to learn about Christianity from the school system. But I wouldn't also want them to have to learn about Islam and Hinduism and Buddhism, because that's exactly what you would have to do.
Right. Yeah. Well, you say there's no state religion in the U.S., which is technically correct, although I think that the general population, a majority of the general population, probably doesn't know that because of the addition to lines like "In God We Trust" on the currency, lines like "One Nation Under God" in the Pledge of Allegiance that were added in there gives the impression that there is. And I think that's where maybe some of the confusion and the intolerance comes from. But before we get too much into that, so the premise, of course, of In the Hands of the Prophets is that Vedic Wynne comes to the station and comes to Keiko O'Brien's classroom to confront her about the fact that she is teaching the children, who are largely Bajoran children, about the wormhole from a scientific point of view rather than from a spiritual point of view, how the Bajorans see it as the celestial temple. And of course, they view the aliens who are living inside the wormhole, the prophets, as their guides. And so that's the setup for the story and the setup for the issue that will be explored here, that the question of whether the classroom should teach science, should teach religion, should teach a mix of those, and generally, how would that be approached? And of course, there's the fact that Keiko, being a representative of the Federation, a Federation citizen, but the station being a Bajoran station that's administered by Starfleet. So there's a lot of there's a mix of cultures here, and you have to take into consideration the cultural aspects when you're determining, you know, how you're going to handle something like this.
Well, one of the things that the station does here is it really is a good representation of honestly the United States with the amount of people who live on there. You do have a majority of people being Bajorans, kind of representing that you know, Judeo-Christian ethic and morality and ideal. You have the Federation, which is very non-committal, and one might say a little bit more atheist in its view of the universe. And then, of course, you have all the other aliens who live on the station that you know, they just happen to live there because it's convenient for them. You know, they have their shipping businesses and things like that. Or you have people like Quark, you know, and his brother who are running shops and those kind of things, and they have their kids in this school. So you have a virtual melting pot in space, and so this issue isn't just cut and dry because it's not just Bajorans at this school, and it's not just Federation people at this school. It's lots of different type of people, and the majority might be Bajorans, but that doesn't mean that they necessarily would then override everyone else. And so, like you said, the issue here is a lot more complex, and something that we wanted to talk about this episode was just where it kind of shifts from that kind of TNG outlook into that Deep Space Nine outlook. And, you know, I think what you said, it started in Duet with that difference there. You get to this episode and this really shifts in its view, because not only are we going to talk about faith and science, which we don't really do much in TNG, and when they do, science kind of puts down faith. Here, faith and science are going to be held up on the same level, and they're going to be kept at that same level by the end of the episode, which is quite shocking for Star Trek.
Well, and what's also shocking is that the person who maintains the balance and perspective is the commander of the station, the Starfleet commander. I wanted to say the captain, but I know technically Sisko is a commander at this point.
He's not
the captain,
true.
But he is the in a way, he is. I mean, he's the head of the station. So, and he's Starfleet, and he is the person in the story who is finding the balance that both viewpoints need to be respected and both viewpoints are valid in their own ways, and especially to the person who holds that viewpoint. And we'll talk about, as we go along, his discussion with Jake, I thought was brilliant. And it shows the kind of parent that Sisko is. I think Sisko really shined as a father in this episode when he explained the situation to Jake and how the Bajorans might see it, and then how he and other Federation citizens, or maybe I should say humans, Federation, they have so many different beliefs, but how the humans on the station would see it.
And not only does he shine as a father in this episode, but I think he really shines as a commander and somebody who really definitely deserved, honestly, to be a captain at this point, because the way that he handles this situation with such tact, with such care, I think shows shades of Picard and Kirk all at the same time, knowing when to act and knowing when to listen, and putting those two together, and it's a really good culmination for who this person is going to be. And I think really a perfect setup for what we're going to get later on in his arc. A man who's very open-minded, which, you know, for honestly, Starfleet is something that's really different, because I tend to think of Starfleet officers as not open-minded people. I really see them as being, we kind of know everything, and if we don't know something, we'll learn it. But usually our way is the best way. And you kind of get that start with Kirk. It goes through, I think, really with Picard, because, you know, his diplomacy, his wisdom always is the one that, you know, sees people through. But it's really not until Deep Space Nine that we realize that the Federation doesn't know everything. And the Federation is a very small part of a very large galaxy. And some of their ideals are fantastic, but they don't know it all. And I think that kind of know-it-all attitude is something that Neela really likes about O'Brien. She even says it. You don't walk around with any airs. You treat us like we're just normal people. And as we talked about O'Brien last week, I think that's one of the strengths of O'Brien, is he just accepts everyone for who they are, and they can believe whatever they want, and he will accept them on the same terms and put them on the same level. But a lot of Starfleet officers tend to look down on other people for believing something that they might find silly or ridiculous, in the way that I feel like Keiko looks down on the Bajorans for actually believing that the Celestial Temple is real.
Well, yes, Keiko is that way. And yeah, I think that certainly Neela implies that a lot of Starfleet officers do look down on Bajorans in that way. And I think it's a good parallel to reality, because what you see, you know, luckily I live in a country where we don't have this religious controversy that you have in the United States, because this is a secular country. Our traditions and customs are rooted in Buddhism and Shinto, but on a day-to-day level, it's a secular society and we don't have this kind of debate. But in the States, you know, when I watch what's going on in the States, what I see, and it's infiltrated the political system now to the point where it's becoming very dangerous, to be honest. Both sides have, well, Keiko and Wynn here are the perfect examples of that, because Keiko is looking down on the Bajorans for even entertaining the thought that there's something spiritual about the wormhole, that it cannot be explained purely through scientific method. At the same time, I think Wynn and a lot of Bajorans, and even Kira at this point in the series, kind of looks down on the other side for not believing that there's some kind of supernatural, spiritual aspect to what's going on. And I see that in the States too. You know, people who are very religious, they look down on people like me who don't believe in this stuff just as much as they feel they are looked down upon on the others. And so it creates this rift and this divide that it's very, very difficult to ever make any progress.
And I think that's one of those things when you look at this episode, I see that we're talking about, you know, kind of a worldview idea. And Keiko makes a statement that she says, I'm going to teach pure science in my classroom, which is really utterly ridiculous because there's no such thing as pure science, because you're going to have to start science from a presupposition, and it's either there is a God or there isn't one. And Keiko is starting what she's teaching the kids as if there aren't any prophets. There's nothing supernatural. There's nothing that can't be explained by science. There's none of these things. And, you know, of course, when on the other side and a majority of Bajorans, they're going to start with the fact that the prophets exist, that they love the Bajorans, and, you know, whether it comes to, you know, how the universe was created and all these things. So you're going to start with some kind of presupposition and some kind of philosophical belief. And Keiko even says, I'm not teaching any philosophy. She even says it like that and just says so vitriolly. But she is, because her fundamental belief, what she's teaching, is starting from the presupposition that there's nothing beyond just this material world, or science, as she would call it. But that's a belief system. And she is therefore teaching it to the students whose parents and belief system is not the same. So you come into that kind of conflict there. Now, again, do we teach faith in schools? No. And do I think that there's anything wrong with saying, this is what we know from science of how the wormhole opens, that how it's created, or any of those things? No, because I don't believe the science disproves the prophets at all. The science and I don't, and the science and the faith are not at odds in this episode at all. But the two sides are making it seem as though they are. And I think that's where you were talking about this kind of like extremism on each side is really hurting us, because we're not willing to listen, you know, and nobody's willing to step up and be the Cisco in especially the United States and say, look, we can have all sides and we can do this well. Why don't we sit down and figure out how to make that happen instead of yelling at each other that, you know, you're wrong and you're wrong. And well, that gets us nowhere.
Right. Yeah. You know, talking about faith and just, and I say faith as in having, believing in something, whether you can prove that it's true or not. And that's, of course, how I see religions, that especially religions that have a God, you know, like Christianity or Judaism or Islam, or these religions that have, especially that have a single God, that what you're going on are stories that have been passed down for thousands of years. And there really is no way, in my eyes, that you can prove that this is ultimately true. I mean, you can prove that parts of the stories are historically true because there may be physical evidence that can be uncovered on the earth for these stories. But there's nothing that we can do to go out and actually, you know, we're not Captain Kirk. We can't fly to the center of the galaxy and go meet God with Cybok. You know, we can't do that. With science, but a similar example is the idea of the Higgs boson, which of course has been something that we've been trying to figure out for a long time. What gives matter its mass? Where does this come from? And so it was predicted that there's a particle, a Higgs boson, but we had no way to detect this. So for a long time, theories were built around this, but we have no proof that this particle exists. We don't know. The difference for me is that we can find out, and we're finding out right now. CERN built the Large Hadron Collider to find this particle, and there was an actual method that could be followed to find it, and it appears right now that they have discovered this particle. For me, that's a difference between the spiritual religious view of the world and the scientific view, that what I'm saying is that I agree with you that they have great similarities and they can follow very similar paths. But one of them, I think, ultimately, we can either prove or disprove, and the other, it's really open-ended. We never can know for sure.
I think in some ways that you are completely correct. There are things that we will be able to figure out in a reproducible manner and be able to figure out. But let's just take evolution as an example. It's a faith system because you can never reproduce it. I can't put it in a laboratory.
Yeah, I don't agree on that.
Figure that out. Yeah. But I mean, I'm just saying, as for the rules of science, I can't go into a laboratory and make that happen.
Right. And, you can't follow it step by step exactly, and watch it happen.
Exactly. Yeah. And so in the end, scientists are putting faith that that's what happened. And because, you know, you're still left with the questions of, say, missing links and how does this happen? And does even macroevolution happen in the first place, or is it all just microevolution? And again, scientifically, it can never be proven by the rules of science because it can't be put into a laboratory and reproduced. And by the rules of science, that's what you have to do. So it has, in the end, it is just as much a faith system as me believing in God, because I can't reproduce God in a laboratory and nobody can reproduce evolution in a laboratory either. And so I see what you're saying and it makes sense, but I think on both sides, we end up having to take things by faith and we choose to believe them because of our experience or our feelings or how we were raised. Or for myself, it's a combination of all of those things plus my own personal study and of, you know, whether it's philosophy and religion and other religions and all of those things, and coming to a place and saying, okay, this is the only thing that truly makes sense to me in any kind of logical way. And it's a big deal. Yeah. It's a big deal.
That's perspective.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's perspective, because for you, you know, you said that is the only thing that makes logical sense to you in any kind of way. And then I'm on the flip side of that. For me, that it doesn't make sense to me. And for me, right, the scientific approach is what makes sense.
Right.
The fact that we... But you're right. I mean, so much of what we know about the universe and, you know, you mentioned evolution. And this is all very true, that so much of what we take as fact are things that we are deducing them from evidence. The difference for me is that there is evidence and it's traceable and we can run experiments on the evidence, but we can't be there in the past and we cannot watch everything that happens along the way. So a lot of things are based on, we're just trusting that we're correct, but we can't.
Yeah. Well, and
necessarily prove
exactly
beyond a shadow of a doubt that we're correct. Yes.
And exactly. And that's why, you know, for me, I can't believe that humanity is the ultimate in the universe and that we could ever figure it out. And so I have I come down on the side of the Bajorans and say, I see evidence for this. I see that it's there, it's real, and it's worth putting my faith into. And I think this gets to the issue we wanted to talk about is, you know, is the view of the prophets and the wormhole, is it valid? And I take the example of Sisko in the story of Deep Space Nine and all of it to say that, you know, you start with a man who's open-minded and willing to accept what he cannot see or really believe in the beginning. And like Moses, he gets to have a lot of interaction with these beings, and it really changes his outlook in the same way that Moses experiences with God on a mountain and in a burning bush, and all of those things really have an effect on him. But you started out with a guy who would not have thought that he would have believed that you know, this is the celestial temple and that these prophets are actually prophets. And I just really like, again, the way that he tells Jake, who are we to say that they're not prophets? They live out of space and time. They're nothing like anything that we've ever seen or heard of before. Who's to say that they're not prophets and that they don't have these powers and shouldn't be believed in by the Bajorans? Just because it doesn't make sense to us doesn't mean it's not true, and doesn't mean that the science beside that of how the wormhole works and all the things that Keiko explains to the children doesn't make those invalid either.
Right. And what's important here too is that early in the episode, when Vedic Wynn refers to him as the emissary, he tells her that, "I really wish you wouldn't call me that. You know, I'm not sure I'm comfortable with that." So he's not comfortable with his role in the Bajoran religion, how the Bajorans see him. But yet what you're talking about right here when he's sitting down with Jake is that he says to Jake that to those aliens, the future is no more difficult to see than the past. So why shouldn't they be considered prophets? And I feel he's telling Jake that, you know, okay, I don't personally see them that way. And I'm not really comfortable with the fact that I'm kind of mixed up in this now somehow myself. But just because I feel that way doesn't mean that the Bajorans can't feel that way. And it doesn't mean that it's not valid from their perspective.
Right.
And that's what he's telling Jake. And Jake says, "Are you serious?" Like, Jake thinks his dad's crazy. And Sisko says, "My point is it's a matter of interpretation. You know, it may not be what you believe, but that doesn't make it wrong. And if you start to think that way, you'll be acting just like Vedic Wynn, only from the other side. And we can't afford to think that way because we'd lose everything that we've worked for here." And that's what I feel in the U.S. right now, just to take it back there. I'm actually kind of shocked that I feel like the divide between the secular society and the religious society is widening. And each side is setting up camp to really separate themselves from the other side. And I think it threatens to destroy everything that the U.S. has built since its birth. And that's what I feel Sisko's telling Jake here, except he's talking about, of course, the Federation building its interest in the Bajoran sector, as well as the Bajorans recovering from the occupation.
And I think the most important thing there is that Sisko is talking about the freedom that you have to believe what you wish to believe, and that nobody should stop you.
Which is what the U.S. has built over all these years.
Right. Nobody should stop you from believing that or be able to express that in, you know, say a public forum. And so both sides, I think, have camped out on extreme places because they feel like both sides are trying to curtail their freedoms.
Exactly. Because what you say here about freedom to express yourself, the thing is that in a situation like this, we see it from Keiko and we see it from Wynn and we see it in our own society. Each side believes that everyone must follow their view in order for that freedom to exist in the first place. That if there's a dissenting opinion, that shouldn't be allowed. And that's not what this freedom is about.
Exactly. And, you know, I believe and wholeheartedly that is why the founders of this country, in the United States, created a system where there is no state religion. There is freedom of religion and expression. And obviously, the United States and a lot of its founders had a belief in a Judeo-Christian sense of morality. Not necessarily did they all believe in God, but they had that basis in morality and felt very strongly that nobody should be put down upon because of what they believed. And they should be able to have the freedom to express that religion in the way that they desired to do that. And they were not allowed to put anybody else down because of what they believed. And yet that is exactly what both Keiko and Wynn are trying to do in this episode. And as we've talked about, that's exactly what's trying to happen on both sides of these very extremist camps. And it is quite sad. And I think it comes down to something that I had mentioned earlier. And it is very difficult when you have opposite worldviews and how to make those come together. But I think that if we truly respect and love people, then we can make that work. And I think that that's really the issue in a lot of this, is that people on both sides, and I will be completely honest, people on both sides are not respecting and loving the people on the other side, because honestly, yeah, they just treat them as if they're some kind of moron, on, you know,
right.
And yeah, that is true. Yeah, that will get us nowhere.
I don't know if you even need to love the other side, but you do need to respect the other side. Just be open-minded enough to realize that there are many points of view. I mean, that's what, and some people I have heard say that, you know, Gene Roddenberry wouldn't like Deep Space Nine because it strays from his vision. But really, I mean, the basis of Star Trek, the idea of IDIC, this infinite diversity and infinite combinations, I mean, that is a core of Star Trek that Gene Roddenberry saw. And that's completely at play here. And in fact, what Sisko is doing is validating Gene Roddenberry's view that, you know, diversity and respect for diversity is what makes the world and the universe go round.
Well, and I don't think that, obviously, I don't think that we need to necessarily love the other side and say what they stand for. That what I mean is that we love the people on either side. We may never see eye to eye, but that doesn't mean that I should treat you as if you are some kind of parasite for believing what you do, because that's going to be no help. And I think this is one of the things that when we talked about Kira as a character, Kira has very strong beliefs, and even in this episode she has very strong beliefs that become tempered with what she sees, you know, from Wynn. But as the series goes on, her beliefs, she lives them out in a way that is very wonderful to watch. And it makes, I think, people who don't believe more curious, because she's not somebody who's trying to convert somebody. She's not trying to push her values and her views on other people in a way that's oppressive. She just lovingly lives them out in a way that's attractive. And I think if both sides did that more often, wow, yeah, how much different would our world be if that was the case? But, you know.
Well, yeah, it would be very different. I think this episode helps her in that a bit, because early in this episode, she's pretty much aligned with Wynn, and she pretty much has a very similar view. You know, she even proposes to Sisko that maybe they need to have two schools, one for Bajoran children and one for everyone else. But at the end, when she sees Wynn's power play and she sees that Wynn, who is supposed to be one of the leaders of this religion into which Kira has put her faith and her life, is willing to set up another leader of that religion and have them assassinated for her own gain, I think that's a point which, again, we saw it in Duet a little bit too. You know, Kira started kind of waking up to things in Duet in relation to the view of Cardassians. And I think here we see it a bit more with her view of the religion, and at least in terms of respecting everyone's right to hold their own views of the world. So in that way too, this is an important character moment for Kira, which comes, well, through the course of the episode, but especially at the end.
Definitely. And that's one of those things that we wanted to talk about as well, was the fact of, you know, Wynn's huge power play here and what she's willing to accomplish to further her own agenda of becoming Kai. And, you know, we get our first realization of just how power hungry and power thirsty this woman is, and that she really is not a believer in her own religion. She's using it for her own gain. And if that's it's not clear before, yeah. It's very clear here, and it will be clear throughout the rest of the series that she's never really a true believer. And it's a sad statement because, and I like that they do this on this episode because it really does denigrate those who would use any religion in this way. And whether we're talking televangelists or fundamentalists on any side, that this the religion would be used for such evil purposes. And all religions all around the world, most of them have had that problem at one time or the other.
Oh, of course. I mean, it's just inherent in humanity, I think, or in this case, Bajoranity, if you want to call it that. I don't know what you call that in Bajoran, but yeah, it's definitely the case. And as we talk about this being a point at which DS9 truly starts becoming DS9 as we think of the series, as it moves out of that kind of uncomfortable transition from TNG storytelling to DS9, which was, of course, very natural because the series were running at the same time and they were kind of finding their legs and they were kind of telling the same kind of stories in the first season that they would tell on TNG. But here, I got to tell you, I hate Wynn.
That's okay. I hate Wynn too.
Everyone hates Wynn. But what I will say is I keep watching DS9. You know, I'm doing rewatches and some of these episodes, like this episode, I've watched four times in the past month or so. Wynn is a really effective character, though. Because you really know people like that. And Louise Fletcher plays Wynn so well. And the way she just makes your blood boil and makes you cringe. I'm kind of starting not to like Wynn as a character, as a person or anything. But from a writing standpoint and an acting standpoint, as a character and the way that she is used to set up the complexity of DS9 and the way that she's used to keep poking that fire throughout the series, I'm really starting to appreciate more and more.
Well, and it's funny because about a month or so back, ended up watching One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, and she's Nurse Ratched.
Yeah.
And
which she won an Oscar for.
Exactly. That. And she's actually quite the same character in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
She just uses the religious aspect as well here. And you're right. Every time I watch this series, I'm more and more drawn into the way that she's portraying this character because it is multi-layered, because she is somebody who kind of wants to have the faith for real, but she never really wants to fully give up her own idolatry of wanting to be in power to actually do that. And even when she's told ways that she can, she'll try for a little while, but then she always goes back to just another power play. And, you know, it's sad because, you know, too, when we look at the Bajoran religion or we look at religions of the world, that's usually not what they're about, you know. It's usually, at least I know for me, it's about a relationship with God.
Yeah, at the root, that's what it's about. And that's why I always say that I separate religion and spirituality. I personally see spirituality as, on an individual level, it's the relationship you have with what you believe in, whether it's, you know, in the case of Christianity, whether it's God, in the case of Buddhism, whether it's a connection with nature. It's on a personal level, whereas I see religion as being the organized aspect of it, you know, everyone going to the church and gathering together and tithing and the doctrine of what you can do this and you can't do that. And of course, we've just seen recently with the change in Pope, you know, the whole transition and the selection of a Pope and the ceremonial aspects of it. That's more what I see as religion. And that's where things, I think, tend to go wrong. Whereas on an individual level, I see it as spirituality, and it's why I, even though I don't believe in this myself, I can always respect anyone who does, you know, like you, Matthew, I can respect that each person can have that view and their beliefs and they're entitled to have that. And it's an individual thing, you know, and it's not anyone else's place to say that that's right or wrong.
And on a lot of ways, there, especially that very last point, I agree with you because it has to be an individual choice, I believe, to believe. Whether you believe or not, it is your choice. And I can't make somebody to believe. All I could do is talk to them and tell them what I believe and why I believe it and why I think it's a good idea that they believe it too. But in the end, it's their choice, and I'm not going to like or dislike them any more or any less if they choose to not believe the way I do, because that's not what I'm called to either. I do think that it's very important to realize that each person does have to make the choice to what they want to believe in. And if they don't choose to believe the way you do, that doesn't make them a horrible person. It just means that you're going to have to accept that they're not going to be the exact same or believe the exact same things as you. And, you know, the best way I think to bring somebody around to your side is not to beat them over the head with it. And that's what we see in this episode. Each side is trying to do to the other. And then you have, in the middle, you have a very emissary-like, very savior-like figure standing in the middle saying, no, there's another way. And I really like that very early they're setting up Sisko to be that character without beating you over the head with it, because it's very, very subtle in this episode, his difference from the rest of the Federation people on the station and the Bajoran people on the station. It's very subtle, but it's very effective, and it'll work really well for his arc in the future.
Right. Speaking of Sisko there, you know, he goes down to Bajor to seek the help of Beryl. And what I find interesting here is that, so the Bajoran religion, a lot of the ceremonial aspects of it remind me of Buddhism a little bit, but actually the Bajoran religion is modeled after 15th, 16th century Catholicism. And you see that a lot, and you see that with the whole structure of the Vedics and the Kai, and you see that with Wynn. What I find interesting when Sisko goes down to meet Beryl is that Beryl is a lot more Buddhist-like compared to the other figures who we see in the Bajoran religion. And I guess that's why Sisko felt that he could go to Beryl, because they both kind of have this view of the situation that requires more balance, I believe, and finding a balance with nature.
Yeah, I guess I don't know if I would have said that he was more Buddhist. I just would have thought that
he's like a Dalai Lama type figure, I feel like.
I guess a Dalai Lama type figure, but with, I mean, he still has his belief in the prophets, and he's just more moderate in his approach. Yeah. He's not extremist. He's not a fundamental extremist. And that gives him, I think, a perspective of being able to see both sides and being able to put himself in the other person's shoes. And that takes a lot of character too, as well. I've never been a huge fan of Beryl in the series. I don't really like the actor who portrays him.
I don't really like the actor either.
I do like his character and just what he does for the series. And I think for the Bajoran religion and the way he kind of introduces that less fundamental sense to Sisko and even to Kira as well, and really helps temper them into somebody who's, you know, much more loving and caring and giving. And I really enjoy that part, because I would have been really upset if this episode had ended like every TNG episode did, and that Faith got smacked down. But in this episode, it's moderate Faith on both sides that wins out the day, from Sisko and Beryl. I really, really like that, because it shows that faith itself has a place in our lives. And I really appreciated that. And I really appreciated, too, the way that they used this finale of this season that started off so rocky for them to really kind of bond Sisko and Kira in a really cool way, and bring them together and kind of help them see, especially Kira, to see things from Sisko's point of view and stop kind of being such a hard ass on him. So this is a fantastic episode, and I think it portrays the very best of Deep Space Nine. And that's right, folks, it's in season one.
Right. It sets up the complexities of what's to come. I feel like maybe they were a little bit surprised with Duet and the power of Duet, because Michael Piller talked about after that they had to top Duet. It's the season finale, and they have to top what they did in Duet. And they apparently had to keep rewriting and pushing the story forward to make it better and better. Like, it wasn't quite living up to what Michael Piller was looking for at first. And they certainly succeeded in the end in setting up they planted a lot of the seeds for the political religious intrigue of the Bajorans in this episode, and they certainly kept it going at the start of season two with the Circle trilogy. And let's just come back around for a minute. When we were talking a second ago, we're talking about it being an individual thing, you know, spirituality being an individual thing. And earlier you mentioned, you know, what we believe in depends a lot on how we're raised and what we're taught when we're young. And that's the other big question here, is what is the best solution to, because I don't think they necessarily resolved this question in the episode of how to handle the education of the children. I'm always kind of disturbed personally when I see stories from the U.S., especially from the South. I'm a Southerner. I'm from Alabama originally. And of course, Matthew, you're a Southerner as well. And I see stories, especially coming out of Georgia over the past decade or so, where there's a lot of push to kind of eradicate science education from the classroom and replace it with religious education, meaning Christianity, which I think you can't do in a country like the U.S. that's supposed to be a melting pot of beliefs, and you've got students who are not necessarily Christian. You know, you have students who are Jewish, you have students who are Islamic, you have students who are atheist, and there are many other beliefs, and you have to kind of bring those all together. I don't personally have a problem with religious education in a school if it's done as, say, an elective course, where when I was in high school, we had to take a core of classes and then we could take a couple of electives. That way, the students who are interested in this and their parents who are interested in them being educated on this topic, they can choose that as an elective. And as you said, Matthew, the school can make sure that the teacher is someone who's qualified to teach the subject. And they could even offer electives on various different religions. That's how I would approach it myself, that you make it available, you keep it out of the core curriculum of what's being taught. That's never really proposed as a solution in this episode, though.
No, it's not. And at least for Deep Space Nine and the episode, this would have been probably the best solution, as to have the Bajoran children have a part of the day where they were tutored in their religious studies by one of the Vedics. And that would have made much more sense. And to have the other students be able to take their classes as well, and they wouldn't be missing out on anything. It just would have been, I think, the best option. In the real world, I don't think that that works as well, because you're going to run into all sorts of problems with, well, you know, what religious classes are going to be taught in the first place, and why isn't my religion being taught? You know, I'm a Jedi. Why isn't my kid learning about that? You know, I mean, that's a very...
I think the Jedi course would be very, very popular,
yeah,
Matthew.
You know, that's a ridiculous example, but you kind of get what I'm saying is how difficult that kind of thing would be.
Well, you say it's ridiculous, but I'm pretty sure that that actually somewhere would come up.
Yeah.
Someone would probably raise that issue.
I think that what it comes down to, and it's what I said at the beginning, is it really is a world view issue. And it's not the job of schools to raise children. It's the job of schools to educate children.
I think that is something that is not always understood.
Exactly. And I think that what they're educated in needs to be math, science, reading. I mean, we just need to give the kids the basics so that they can then, you know, go to college if that's what they need to do, so that they can, you know, get the job that will be best for them. And honestly, too, this is what college is for. You have the ability to take all sorts of different types of classes when you get to that point, because you're old enough to make that decision for yourself. You know, when it comes to education, though, of our young children, they need to know the basics. And we're failing at that in the United States horribly.
Yeah.
And there's all sorts of reasons for that that have nothing to do with whether it's religious education or not. So that's a whole other subject. And so, you know, really, to me, the real issue seems to be here, not so much that, but can we just teach the kids the basics so that they can be competent? Yeah. So that's a whole other type of podcast, but apologize for the soapbox.
Well, but it's a good point. That's why I say there should be a core curriculum. And then if you want to have electives on other topics, then, you know, I mean, I would not oppose that. I think there is equal validity in teaching science and teaching religion and spirituality, but you have to be taught both of them. You can't be taught one or the other, because ultimately, when you become an adult and you really solidify your worldview, you need to have as much information as possible so that you can figure out how it all fits together for you. So if you're taught exclusively science and you're never exposed to religion, you don't have all the information that you need. And it works the same way. And that's why I'm especially opposed to the idea of focusing on religious aspects and removing scientific aspects from a curriculum. I think it's particularly dangerous because you have to step outside of, this is going to be my little short soapbox, I think. The way the world works, and when you're educating children, science is critical, and religion is something that may enrich your life and help you find deeper meaning in the world. But if children aren't taught science, we can't understand how the universe works on a physical level to be able to make the electronics that we all take for granted that allow us to do this podcast right now, how machinery works, how medicine works so that we can solve problems, cure diseases, solve famine. These things all depend on science. No amount of spiritual belief or faith is going to solve these problems or make these devices reality for us. So I think it's really important that the science education is held up. But I also think that you could be shortchanging yourself if you're not allowed to be exposed to the spiritual aspects.
And I think that you're right, because one, I don't think that science and religion are at odds. I think that science helps explain the universe that God created, and we're rational beings created in his image. At least that's what I believe. And that's why we have science, because God has given us the ability to understand the universe. And so I would never want, you know, science to be taken out of a classroom, because I believe that it gives kids a greater understanding of the grandeur and the beauty of who God is by being able to understand a little bit on how the universe works. I would also say that without religious people with deep conviction, much of the science that we have today would never have happened, as well as much of the good in this world would never have happened. Most charities are religiously based, and a lot of scientific discovery in the past was because people had a firm belief in God and wanted to understand his world. And so I think you're right, Chris. There's no reason to take these two and put them at odds when they have worked so beautifully together in the past, and I believe can continue to do so to enrich our world for those who need it. And I specifically think of, you know, the diseases that we still want to conquer that take so many lives. And why would I want to see that happen? It's not just because I want, science to reign, but it's because I want those people's lives to be saved and made better and given an opportunity to live a full and, you know, amazing life. And that comes from my care, and that comes from my belief that that can happen because we've been given the ability to make discoveries like this through things like science. And it's just another tool that we have been given. So I definitely think you're right. I think if a child is not given these different types of education, you are at a loss. Because two, and we said this with Kira when we were talking about her, if your faith is not strong enough to stand the test of something like science, then it's not something that you should probably be believing in. If it can't stand beside something else, it can't be tested, if it can't be tried and not found completely wanting, then you probably shouldn't be believing in it. And so I welcome the chance and the opportunity to maybe hear something that I might not believe in, because it challenges me to rethink what it is that I think and why I think it and whether I should continue to be thinking it. And having that critical mind, I think, is very important no matter what you believe. And we shut that critical mind off and we just automatically shun somebody, as we saw each of these polar opposites do in this episode, we get nowhere and we're not enriched. And it takes somebody, and it takes the attitude of somebody like Cisco to really say, no, I might not understand why you believe this, but that doesn't necessarily make me right, doesn't necessarily make you wrong, doesn't make you right, doesn't make me wrong. Maybe I can understand better the universe by understanding your point of view, and maybe you can understand the universe better by understanding mine. And I think that's just a much better attitude.
Yeah, and at the end of the episode, near the end of the episode, Beriel calls for the kind of understanding when he tells the crowd that it's time to forge a new beginning and to accept new ideas, not to be afraid of them, and to reject violence as a solution. And I think this is where we are in the world today, too, that I think violence as a solution is becoming more acceptable. And hopefully we will turn that corner, as Beriel talks about, and as Cisco is championing here as well, and even as Kira comes to see, I believe, at the end of this episode. We've had a big discussion here about In the Hands of the Prophets. This is a very big topic that, of course, cannot be contained in one show, but I'm sure it's a core element of Deep Space Nine, so no doubt we'll be talking about similar topics along the way, as things unfold, as Vedic Wynn's power play ultimately does result in her becoming Kai, even though she was willing to, I wouldn't say assassinate, because she doesn't have the guts to do it herself, but she was going to have Neela assassinate Beriel for her, and told Neela that, you know, basically it's the will of the prophets, and if you have to die for it, then so be it. And that in and of itself is a dangerous idea, but that's where we're going. And that's why, again, I think we feel this is the turning point for DS9, where the promise that we saw in Emissary comes to fruition and we start to get the complexity of storytelling that will define the series ultimately to the end. It picks up speed as the series goes on and on. But yeah, this is where I think it really starts.
And I think that Deep Space Nine as a series is up to the challenge of challenging us and our kind of preconceived notions. One, it's going to challenge the preconceived notion of what a Star Trek show should be, but then it's going to challenge those things that we've come in, those presuppositions we've come in with about all sorts of things, science, faith, all of these kind of huge issues, life, death. It's enormous. And I think that it is what makes this show so good, and what makes me enjoy watching it over and over again, because I really do feel like that I get a lot out of it. And even for me, I get a lot out of it just by thinking about then maybe my own faith or my own thoughts about these kind of issues. And I appreciate that a show, a Star Trek show, does that, and in a way that I think, even as good as some of the issues that we got in TOS, TNG, this just really takes it to a whole nother level.
Yeah, it most definitely does. And you get more out of it every time you watch it, you know, even 20 years later. And that's what's wonderful about it as well.
Precisely.
So, Matthew, let's invite the listeners to share their thoughts on this episode, on these controversial topics, if you would like, and how they play into Star Trek. You can do that over at our forums at trek.fm/forums. There's a section for The Orb, there's a section for Deep Space Nine. And we would ask everyone, please be respectful if you are discussing these topics. I think, you know, most Star Trek fans are respectful, but these are very hot button issues. And in the spirit of Star Trek, as Matthew and I have just done here, we want to be able to see things from different perspectives, and you know, it helps us expand our own view of the world. So we invite you to join us there. You can also go to trek.fm/contact and send us a message through the form there. Choose to send to a show and send to The Orb. And you can find us on Facebook, facebook.com/trekfm, and on Twitter under username trekfm. Matthew, what if people want to find you personally?
Well, I hope they do, Chris. I am on Twitter at MattRushing02, as well as on Trek FM doing the book reviews and literary treks with you as well, where we talk books and comics. Happen to be going through the Deep Space Nine relaunch at the moment. So if you do enjoy Deep Space Nine, especially in the literary world, please join us there. And sometimes on the Ready Room. So join us there as well.
That's right. Yeah, you can find me elsewhere on the network besides on Literary Treks with Matthew, on The Ready Room, where we cover all the Star Trek series, TOS, all the way through Enterprise, and loop around once again. And we do the movies as well. And we do news, and it's a mix of humor and serious discussion. So I hope you'll look us up there. And you can also find me on Twitter. My username is C. Brian Jones. That's Brian with a Y. And you can find me pretty much everywhere in social media under that username. And we'd also invite you to share your thoughts about the show over on iTunes. And we'd like to extend a thank you to Enterprise Extra, who left us a 5-star review and a written review on iTunes, saying that he really appreciates the straight, intelligent conversation on the topic of DS9. So we're glad that the show is connecting with you in that way. And if you leave us a rating and review over there, it will help other Niners find the show on iTunes, which is somewhat mysterious in the way that it returns search results. So we thank everyone for your ratings there. And we should also mention, if you leave us a rating or review in a store outside of the US, please send us a note. Let us know, because we have to manually go to each country's store in order to see those. That's just the way iTunes works.
Well, thank you for joining us, and we will see you next time when we gaze into the orb.